Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I'm Paul France, owner of France Games. I'm an SWB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Doesn't matter how it joins me, talkcast every Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Well, cancel that. No longer talkcast. We now have a Discord stream starting at 9:30 Eastern Time. You can go to the Starfleet Universe server, and you can join us there. The TalkShoe.com will still have our podcasts in the future, but in the future, we'll no longer be streaming there anymore. We'll still be streaming live on twitch.com/SFUOnCall. Yes, go to twitch.com/SFUOnCall and go there if you want to watch us live. Obviously, if you want to listen to us live, you can just go to the Discord. And of course, you can contact me for any reason. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you can follow me on the Twitters, on, of course, sfuoncall. Personal account is also Paul Franz. And it's PaulFranz. There's no T in it. And also Franz Games, FranzGames. Of course, also have accounts on Blue Sky, the podcasting account is sfuoncall.bsky.social, and the Franz Games account, oh, my business slash personal account is franzgames.com. And of course, the lovely podcast gets into podcasts available on iTunes and various other feeds around the network. When it comes to news this week, it's pretty quiet. The only news that actually occurred, which was joyful news, which is Steve Patrick came back to the office. Obviously, he still has his medical issues, but hopefully Steve Petrick can get some things done. Just a reminder that Steve Petrick is no longer running the tournaments. I'll be running the Sapphire Star tournaments. So when you sign up, I'll be joining them, not Steve Petrick. Moving on and forward to the this week on the online store, we have FNE Compendium Part 3, which is $12.95. FNE players ask for a compilation of FNE information from the Capitalist Log, putting all sorts of useful information in their hands in one easy book. Compiling all these information, the Capitalist Log number 20 through 40 took two books. That was the number 1 and 2 of the compendium. And now we've wrapped it up with Capitalist Log number 50 on part 3 of the compendium. With all the FNE information from those captain's logs, we have hunted up information for captain's log supplement files also. All the rules, tactical notes, questions and answers, ship information tables, scenarios, playtest rules, proposal for those issues in this handy compendium. Captain's log number 41 marked the release of the FNE 2010 rulebook, so you'll have all of the information about it. These pages have not been edited from the original publication, so you may find earlier ruling is changed later on. However, with this collection, you will know the reason why behind those decisions. Moving onward and forward, we've, of course, got the signups are still open for Sapphire Star 19 tournament. Also, the 500 BP free tournament has gone to the finals with Dana versus Frank. I lost my game. And so, onward. And when it comes to the online client, not much happening there. Just a reminder that you should upgrade to 4.8.2. And especially if you're Windows, you need to reinstall. Uninstall and reinstall. Please do so. It's not for you. It's actually for your opponents. So your opponents actually see the proper SSDs and so forth. That will be more stable. It'll be definitely that part that has been unstable for the past 6 months. And I apologize that it's I was hoping that things got solved. And unfortunately, it's one of those issues where it would solve the update for the third party library I was using would solve a problem for a specific issue, and then other issues would show up. for other ships, not the same ships, but other ships. So obviously there's some streaming issues there. And I decided I'm done with it. I'm done. I'm just done with that. So in the future, that will not occur. I will not move off that. As long as that third-party library works, we'll be using it. If it doesn't, if it stops working, then we'll have to move to a different third-party library, in which case we might actually have to have everyone do another massive all update your client kind of move. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to this Starfleet Warlord, there's going to be a new Die Hard 2059 game that's going to be announced starting this weekend. There'll be an email sent out so that you can sign up for that, and it's going to be starting at 2 weeks and always going for 2 weeks when it comes to the cycle of turns for those who know in the know there. When it comes to library port, there's no updates either in the SFB or the FedCom library. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one and only Paul Friends welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got Gary. See, hi, Gary.
Hi, Gary.
We've got Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
And actually, we have Matt here also. So, say hi.
Hello.
Okay, dun, dun, dun. There, just want to make sure. Okay, I think I'm all good when it comes to everything. Yeah, I'm actually watching live on my iPad over here. So anyway, yeah, as in the pre-show, Gary stopped in because basically it's an end of an era. That is, at today, this is the last episode I'm gonna be streaming live from TalkShoe. As I mentioned before, I will be actually posting. I still will be posting podcasts to TalkShoe. Hopefully that will be automatic, in that I can upload the podcast and it'll automatically add it to the feed and so forth. So hopefully that works out. After this episode, I'm gonna kick them in the butt to post all the latest episodes so that the podcast feed is up to date. Now, if that does not help, then it's gonna be, is what it is. And I'll be changing the Apple iTunes feed to go to my SFU On Call website, which as I mentioned before, I don't want to do. But if they give me no choice, as in the system is so broken that they keep, I have to keep on kicking them in the butt just to have it so that it will update the podcast feed, which should be an automatic process. I'm gonna do that. Even when I do that, I will still upload them to TalkShoe at that point, just so that anyone who's actually getting the podcast from TalkShoe, because I asked why a while back, people, it's like, okay, how do you actually listen to the podcast? And I only got one response. And I know there's at least there's Ross, he actually responded. I know that one other person actually was listening it through the podcast. I know there's quite a few people also that listen to the YouTube videos. But that's about it. And I don't know anyone, I don't know the ones that are actually going directly to TalkShoe.com and finding or have a link to SFU On Call, because Lord knows it's not exactly, even the search is broken. So I'm gonna do my best and see if I can, at the very least, get a URL to the SFU On Call at TalkShoe, so I can post it on SFU, so I can post it on SFU.com and have it so that if people want to visit, go get the podcast from there, from TalkShoe, they can actually find it, or if people need to know it I can actually send it to them. So.
Can I ask you a quick question, Phil?
Shoot.
So, I was listening into one of the previous episodes, and you were talking about how there seems to be a divide in terms of the people who tune in, who listen just to the news portion, and then people who actually listen to the podcast proper. Mm-hmm. But now that you're moving away from TalkShoe in terms of the actual live streaming, mm-hmm. would it be an option to do a splitsies? Basically have it that you basically release the audio file of the news portion or the YouTube clip of the news portion as a separate thing entirely from the actual podcast portion, so that then you'd get a better sense of who's tuning in for which one.
In theory, I could do that, and well, I put a cat on me. I could possibly do that. Obviously, I could post it up on YouTube as a separate channel if people want that. You know, it's hard to measure. As I pointed out, I think most of that was from YouTube listening, that most of them, you know, listen for a short period of time and then they drop off. It's rare that it's, at least when it comes to the stats and so forth for YouTube anyway, that they don't actually usually listen to all the way through. And that's it is what it is, you know.
Was that where they were dropping off after the news portion, basically?
Yeah. That's the only way I can see it. When it comes to regular podcasts, I have no numbers when it comes to the podcast feed, because I don't know on that. I can, in theory, I could know for the one that's actually hosted on my website. In theory, I could, I'd have to set it up. Yeah, I'd actually have to add those metrics into the logs to find out, okay, what is the range that people are actually, because if depend when it comes to the podcast, an actual podcast feed, you don't know if someone actually just goes and just downloads the episode, the full episode, you don't know how they listen to it. If they stream it, which some people, you know, do these days, That's the only time you actually can see what is when they play, what kind of ranges they download, because you can download part of it. You know, in theory, you can actually see if they jump around. But yeah, mm-hmm. you have to set up the logs to actually do that, because it's part of the request, but not part of the actual URL that's normally just logged. Of what you're actually downloading. So, and that's only for right now sfuoncall.com. I can't see that information from either iTunes. I can't see that kind of information from TalkShoe. They don't show that kind of stuff.
It might be the idea just to do it as an experiment. Like, you don't have to like switch over full time, but maybe next week or the week after, just offer like one little 5-minute clip or whatever, and that would be the news. And then the actual like podcast itself like would be a separate file, and then see what happens.
So basically, you're suggesting adding two podcast episodes to the feed. One's the news portion, one's the regular show.
Yeah, that's what he said.
And also on YouTube, because you just do them as two separate videos, because you say you record the news portion separately anyway. So just say, hi there, here's the news for this week. And then if you want to hear the podcast, you know, have a look for such and such or whatever. So you're basically helping to kind of sell the podcast at the end of the news feed. But if people want to go for it, great. And if they don't, then they've got the news portion. So you still get your views. But it just seemed like that might be a way to kind of approach it, especially since you're not going to be as tied to TalkShoe's intricacies, for lack of a better term, going forward.
That could be good and that could be bad. Because what that might do is, if I split it between two different episodes, well, even on YouTube, then I might get only half the views then. If they're truly only listening to the news portion and not listening to the rest of the podcast, then I'll get half the views.
Yeah, it's going to tank the one that they don't, where they tune out from.
Right.
I mean, it would just be, all it would do for you is give you a momentary view of how many people are just tuning in for the news portion and how many people are going for both.
Right.
Whereas if you leave it together, that's less work for you to do for taking it apart, and gives you, and on YouTube, I think the analytics allow you to see where they're dropping. So you've already looked at that and said they're mostly tuning in for the news portion anyway. So.
Right. They drop out.
It's kind of a pointless exercise there.
Yeah.
Whereas on the other platforms, from what I'm hearing, split it into two, then that would let you know how much they're tuning in for.
And yeah. Russ points out that he uses a downloader for YouTube, which does not actually get registered as a watch in YouTube.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I do something similar for things that I want to get out the adverts for.
Understood. Even without the adverts, the thing is, the number of people that view that video is then decreased by one, because that's not marked as a view when you download the video, when you use one of those YouTube downloaders.
The question I'd have for you though, Paul, is when you're doing a video recording, do you stop the video recording at the end of the actual episode?
Yes.
And then record the news portion as an entirely separate one. So you're stitching the two videos together anyway in order to put it up as a single YouTube video. Is that correct?
Correct.
So then, I guess, would it be more work in the fact that you're actually doing the stitching together and then uploading? Rather than, I mean, as I say, I'm not saying that you do this full time. Like this, if this doesn't work after a week or two, like I know to go back, but it might be a good experiment, at least, to be able to kind of test the waters and see, in the longer term, which is the least amount of work for you to be able to get the optimum result.
Understood. Well, I can try it. I can try it. Let's see
what kind of. As our friends on a certain Class K planet would say, it might be the logical course of action.
Yeah. Yeah,
how did you do in your game there, Paul?
Poorly. Kind of wondering, but okay, but we'll definitely we want to move on to that, because that's the main topic for this evening, which is how I played, and a review of the game, the final. I think it's like seven impulses of the game. Which is okay. What drives me nuts is just how long it takes to play a turn. But it can't be helped because of course you have the problem with drones and then decisions and all kinds of fun stuff like that. So let me just.
Oh, that plus you guys are playing like squadron battles. So there you go.
Right. Right.
And some people are faster than others that way, too.
So,
It may or may not matter that there were a lot of seeking weapons if somebody is on on the spot there.
Yeah.
But there's also a ton of stuff to do when you're doing the squadron fights compared to like just the regular tournament fights that we're used to listening to.
Yep.
Totally different bear. It's a pack of bears. Pot of bears.
Sure. Okay.
Family of bears.
So maybe one of these days,
okay,
maybe
Goldilocks,
might think of one or three gives us make the goal faster.
So we're going to find out which part of this was just right for the bear player.
Yeah, exactly.
And which
exactly.
part of it wasn't so just right for Paul.
That's
sorry, true. Paul.
That's fine. Okay, well, we start off with turn four. What I decided to do was basically, since my CAs were closer than the other ships, I was going to keep them going speed 16, but change all my ECM to ECCM. You know, hold the particle cannons as they stood, which is for all 5 points of energy in them. And the destroyers, I kept the EM going, the erratic maneuvering going from the previous turn. The previous turn. This is the second turn run up ahead of the full turn. Allocated for the fourth turn. And actually, believe it or not, I actually did start charging wild weasels back on turn two. If I wanted to actually stop and have the drones hit me there. And the speed plots for the CAs were just a flat 16 over the whole term. And what I did for the destroyers is I changed it from a 16-10 split to a 10-16 split to a 16-10 split. Of meaning, going speed. I started speed 16 and went to speed 10. The idea is I could keep up with the CAs and hopefully close on the rest of the fleets and do like a second run through after the initial attack from the heavy cruisers. So this is where we're starting it, and had to adjust EWs and so forth because of it doesn't know about EM that it's actually active, possibly a shortfall that with a client that there's no way of actually specifying that you're currently using erratic maneuvers. Yeah, and then Frank said, "Oh, why don't you change it so it's actually loaned instead of just making the change directly on the EM produced?" And okay, it was a quick surprise. Who's calling? Yeah, I said I'd call the turn. Pretty simple. Now,
did you say that?
Yes.
Sorry, quick question. Did you say that there's no way for the clients to show erratic maneuvering? You mean as in like on the counter or like in the actual form, like while you're playing the game?
Well, there's currently no indication that the erratic maneuvering is currently active. Not in SFB normally, that there is no. I'm pretty sure there's no counter for erratic maneuverings. That a counter is using erratic maneuverings.
Just an announcement. Yeah.
And I don't have any checkbox that indicates that, oh yeah, I currently have erratic maneuvering active. And that's a shortcoming of the client. Obviously that's something I could change in the future because of the one thing when it comes to the future of the client. As I mentioned many weeks before, actually probably months. Yeah, it's months at this point. Which is that I think more and more of the games are being played on the online client are less tournament games and more fleet games. Because the tournament crowd has been less, but we still have quite a few people that still like to play. And we got people who I've gone through the cadet scenarios, which I'm so glad I set up because that's helping people learn how to play SFB. And so those people can learn it. And if obviously people can still use the tournament cruisers, which I think are excellent way of learning how to play SFB, also going to like the next step after the cadet training module, you know, going through the cadet training stuff, because then you still have a relatively controlled environment versus SFB, especially if you're talking about the advanced rules of SFB, which has the EW and everything else in SFB versus. And I'm not sure how many people ever did this, and I'm showing my age, because when I originally learned how to play SFB, there was no cadet training manual. All there was is that you learned how to play the basic rules, all the rules that were marked as basic. So things that are considered advanced, like overloads. Overloads was a advanced rule. And I still remember the first game that I played against myself. I had classic battle of Klingon versus Fed, and I was maneuvering them around, and they got to range zero, and it's like, crap, can't fire, because I think neither one of those could
photons,
actually.
Photons, yeah, you can't shoot your photons at zero.
You can't shoot photons at zero, and I'm pretty sure you can't fire disruptors at zero if you're not overloaded.
I thought disruptors were still a zero, though.
That's true.
The photons are hosed on.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, okay.
Oh, well. So trivia question.
Yeah.
Trivia question that you might want to jot down for future reference. And it's just a thought for the client before we go back to like how your game went.
Mm-hmm.
What about, do you have currently, or would you consider, if you add erratic maneuvers in, would you consider adding like a scroll over pop-up window that would show a status for each unit? That says if there is an applicable effect on it, such as erratic maneuvers or electronic warfare, like pluses and minuses and stuff like that.
Oh,
or cloaking.
Because there's a lot of stuff in the game that we have to announce, but you never have like a counter for, and it's easy to keep track of sort of because, you know, if you're sitting face to face. But in the client, it might not be quite as easy a thing to constantly keep track of.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a random thought I had while you were talking about that.
How about have a thing on the counter that blinks if the ship is on erratic maneuvers? Like maybe the actual outline of the ship itself, like it blinks, and then when it blinks out, it actually says EM, and then blinks back to the counter. And so when goes off erratic maneuvers, the counter solidifies.
Well, that could also be like part of the scroll over thing. Like you need to, if you're using electronic warfare in the scenario, then you need to know for each unit what the electronic warfare status is. And it's like, do you have to manually write everything down yourself or remember it all or ask your opponent every 5 seconds?
No, you record the currently. The client supports having two things for each unit, which is ECM and ECCM, and the other one is loaned ECM and ECCM.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the actual the game control, you have a column which is called total ECM/ECCM, which combines the two numbers.
But it does not include other effects like erratic maneuvers.
Well, erratic maneuvers basically comes under loaned.
Okay. So you do have it covered slightly.
Slightly, yes. And when it comes to the ECM effect, yes, I do have it covered there.
Okay. That was just kind of my thought. I mean, you know, there you go. So yeah. how did you get, where were we at on you?
To, to support Doug there, it's worth noting that the EW status is at the top of the SSD. There's a little info bar
right
above the drop down there that shows all of the EW status. And it could be useful to put in like your erratic maneuver effects or your cloak effects or whatever. Just note that you're under a cloak on that bar.
Right. Now, okay, obviously there's a minor thing with cloaking, which is status. When there's cloaking, there's different cloaking statuses. There's either all the way off, and then there's the fading, exactly. Fading in or out. And depending upon, okay, what kind of ship you have, the fading in or out can be faster or slower. And then, in addition to cloaking, there is, the Omega, who was it that had an effect which is kind of like cloaking?
Well, there's actually, just before we get onto the cloak equivalent thing, I just wanted to ask, how do you represent it on the Fed Commander client when the ship is on evasive maneuvers? Because on the FC side of things, evasive maneuvers is basically the equivalent of erratic maneuvering, but there's no other kind of EW, so it's basically just kind of like a standalone effect, so to speak. So does the FC portion of the client have a representation for that? And if so, is it something that could be backfitted to the SFE client?
I would have to check. I know that you can, there is a button to announce erratic maneuvering and actually automatically with take the power out of the available power for the ship. But I'm not sure if it actually maintains a status of, this is currently using erratic maneuvering.
So technically, you could do a blinky thing for both game engines.
Right.
Because you think about it, your ship, when it's evasive maneuvering, it's moving back left and right. So just imagine it's got the turn signals on.
Right, right. But at the same time, we don't want something that that's flashing on the client. Just because then you might trigger some people. I admit that, the flashing is usually not that large enough to actually have effects for people who have problems with flash effects, like for movies and things like that.
Well, I think more the problem would be the cluttering of the board and everything else. If you start having things flash, you may get like a sensory overload thing, and it just would be too much, I think, in some cases.
Right.
Kind of unnecessary for what you're doing.
Yeah.
Now it could be a nice thing to have if you have like a flash on it for like scroll over.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, selecting, but
right, yeah,
I see where you're coming from on that. Yeah,
agreed. I could add it to the tooltip, which when you hover over a unit, which might be actually multiple units, they could actually show that up because currently, you know. It shows, it shows just the position and the speed and the direction that the units are currently going in the,
okay,
it's called a tooltip, but you know, it happens with, you might be calling a hover text. So moving on forward. Yes.
The question you were asking. Yeah. So, okay. In the Lesser Magellanic Cloud, the pirates there, the Jamalkians, they have a thing called the distortion field generator.
Right.
And that has three different settings, but there's no fade in and out, so to speak. Basically, it either functions or it doesn't function. That is basically affects your penalty hexes. So if your ship doesn't necessarily disappear, like it's still mostly visible, it's just a little bit harder to hit. And also it's easy to escape because you shorten the distance you need to disengage by acceleration, or by distance rather. But in Omega, there's playtest. Now, bear in mind, these are not final rules because there probably still need to be a few adjustments here and there. But the Zosman Marauders, I don't know if you actually have them in the client yet because they're just in Captain's Log 50 and 52. Oh, very good. So those have the stealth field,
mm-hmm.
which when it activates, there's no fade in or fade out either. It either pops on or off. And when it's on, it treats both your ship and the other ship as if they have passive fire control. So, like in Shapeways terms, or Shapeways 1.0 back in the day, they did have some Zosman SSD, Zosman miniatures. So, if you got the clear ones, you could buy two of them and put one on the board when it's got the stealth field on. So it's cloak adjacent, but you don't need to worry about the fade in or fade out period. So it's in the same way.
And there's also the Soldra over in the Omega also.
I think that was what I was thinking of, was the Soldra.
That's a dimensional phase device. That's basically where the ship physically leaves open space. It goes into like a different phase of reality, and then you just have it pop back on the board after a certain length of time.
Yeah, that's, so,
one,
that's one of those ones.
That's another reason. I buy two Soldra adventures.
My God, you've made phase spiders for SFB.
Yeah. I understood.
Nice.
I have to double check with the client because I know the client supports hidden ships. I mean, in theory, you can hide your ship and have it so you can see it, but your opponent can't see it. I don't remember if I got that all right at the moment, because it's been a while since I've actually looked at that code and actually tested things to make sure that it all works. I.e., if it's a hidden ship, it should not be announcing the movement of that ship in the
chat. That's always the concern on that hidden stuff. Yeah, you never know if what you're seeing is what the other guy is not seeing. There's always that concern.
Oh, agreed. And that's always going to be until, you know, there's a certain trust factor there, you know, that.
Could you do something to the font of things that are only being seen by one person so that it's obvious this is different, like maybe italicize or turn it red or something?
Oh, you mean within the chat log?
Yes.
In theory, that should be possible, you know. Yeah, that should be possible.
Because this isn't just for the dimensional phase device, but this is also for hidden mines and stuff, which I run into a lot with campaign games.
Right, and then, of course, there is actually support for it, which is, within the rules themselves, which is hidden cloaks.
Yes.
Which is interesting by itself. Because I think it's an additional, it gives that ship, it costs an additional 25% BPV if you're playing with hidden cloaks. Of course, the whole hidden cloaks gets really weird, because then you have the kind of triangulation kind of thing. Every, I don't know how many impulses it is, that you actually can ask the other player, okay, what shield is it off of for, like, this one ship? What shield is it off of? And in theory, you can kind of triangulate where the ship is if you have multiple ships. You know. But anyhow, we should move on. Obviously, on Impulse 1, the first thing that happens is, if you remember from last time, I was doing my game, which is that the ships are tractored to each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're paired up.
This is always a good sign.
So, you know, they're still tractored to one another, and what that did was it allowed them to actually move on impulse number one because of delayed movement. Because both ships were moving the same direction. And because they're going the same direction, you can't move twice.
And it's delayed onto impulse one.
So it gets delayed to the next impulse.
Right.
And since they're still tractored, you know, over the turn break, they didn't drop the tractor, then they actually still move on the following impulse,
which is interesting, because you could always mess somebody's plan up by like letting go during the phase. But yeah, go on.
True.
So there you are.
Yeah, so there I am.
All happily tractored and waiting to move.
Yep. And then we got all these wonderful drones from the Drogues closing in. And that's first thing I do is actually an impulse one. I decided, okay, I need to lab these. First thing I did was check my heavy cruiser, go, okay, how many labs do I have on this sucker? Which is 4. And so then I attempted to ID all three of the closest drones. I just said 3 closest drones because it was just too big of a pain to get the IDs for the drones that I want to specify that I'm trying to identify.
Mm-hmm.
And if... I'm actually this
4 labs isn't bad for a ship designed in the galaxy where no one has seeking weapons.
True, but labs are used for other things other than identifying seeking weapons. Labs can be used for scientific studies.
Monster stuff.
Yep, monster stuff. And of course, he does something before that, which is he loans my beautiful CA number 1 6 points of offensive EW. So, like, oh, great. So, that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have to note that I'm being loaned a -6 ECCM, because it's against me, not the, it's ECM that other people try, if other people try to fire at that ship. So that's why it's a -ECCM. Identify the drones, and what, of course, they're the classic standard type 1F drones. And actually, the thing is, after this one, I just figured that all the drones were type 1F. And basically, they were. I never, during this whole game, I didn't run into a single special drone.
But you ran into lots of regular ones, I take it.
So. Yeah, and, well, I didn't run into any of them. Actually, I did run into a few, but not many. But that couldn't be helped. And he launched another shuttle, the Bismarck. And I forgot, that's one thing. I think that happened. Let me see for a moment. Right, that's the identification, which is then. When did he? Okay, must have been okay. Yeah, must have been last turn. I'm not sure if I mentioned it or not. Which is basically, he launched. 2 Sabo, I think 2 Sabo, but either 2 or 4 Sabo plasma apps. That's why if you're watching the video, which is one of those videos that you episodes you really should watch the video, and that is that you'll see speed 40 as one of the speeds. Because we have some Sabo plasma coming towards me. Now, these are plasma Fs, so they're not exactly the fastest thing, the strongest torps, but, still annoying. Yeah, this is where I have to figure out, okay, what phasers. Unfortunately, I fired some phasers late in the last turn, so those aren't available for the beginning of this turn. And most of those are the left side phasers. which is the ones that I would need to fire on the left-hand side. Shocker. Fortunately, my FA arc phasers were still available. A lot of the drone defense I did actually was not from CA number one, but CA number two, which didn't have any offensive EW against it. And I had more phasers available. And for those of you who actually looked at my EA, one thing that should be noted is that I used the phasers on turn three to do drone defense. And on turn four, I did not recharge my phasers at all because I didn't have enough power. Because otherwise, I would be going really slow. Instead of going speed 16, I'd be going like speed 12, speed 10, if I needed to recharge my phasers. So I'll let things roll when it comes to that. Figuring that I could at the very least keep them down, and hopefully, you know, if I need to use wild weasels later on to last desperate protection against drones coming in. Now, yeah. Again, he loans two offensive EW to my CA, you know, like my heavy cruiser number two. So it's like, really? But this is the annoying thing of having a scout in your opponents. And I don't have a scout myself. So that's obviously one of the also deficiencies in my fleet, that I have no scout and he has a scout. But the scout I actually wanted to use, I can't use, which was the survey cruiser. I was more than willing to give up my offensive potential to have the survey cruiser, because the survey cruiser, the great thing about that was that it was a scout. Unfortunately, not real. It never actually didn't. Conjectural. Thank you.
Conjectural. Yeah. Yeah.
I made a boo-boo when I was adjusting the EW.
Actually, though, I'm pretty sure that they have a light cruiser scout or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly, but I think the issue was the years. And they had a regular like frigate-based scout, which was available within the time frame that I was allowed. The one thing I hate about frigate based scouts is the amount of power. They have very limited amount of power. You know?
It's not a destroyer scout?
Well, I forget. It's been a while since we actually started this campaign. It's been quite a few months. So it might have been a destroyer instead of, I could have sworn it was frigate scout. I'd have to actually look. Obviously, on this Impulse 3, I wiped away the three drones that were within range 2. Actually, it was range 1 by the time I fired on them. And now we still have the scatter pack drones, which are closing in. And the one thing I was thinking about here is that I was wondering, given that they were split, that they might actually be going against my destroyer. Because if you look here, right here, okay, look right here, those of you that are just listening, it's closer to being off to the side. It's almost
not taking a leading.
Yeah,
it's not taking the leading on
your main ship. Taking a leading.
Yeah,
and it's almost is on the shield break between the two. You know, shield break, shield. You know, line between the shield number six and shield number five from the heavy cruisers. So I thought maybe the drones over here were actually going after my destroyers. Actually, that turned out not to be the case.
That was well done.
But they're actually, if I recall correctly, they actually end up being against my heavy cruiser number two. And, Justin showed up, and he got quite upset because he couldn't see the graphical SSDs. After all of a sudden, after he decided it's not worth watching the game, if you can't see the graphical SSDs, he basically just went away. But I actually went back to look to find out, okay, what was the cause? And because it took me a while and I reviewed it in my mind, which is that just let you know, okay, I'm gonna pause the video as I explain this. I found out what the problem was that he was having is actually because his subscription had expired and he had not renewed. And so he was playing as a demo account. That's one of those. In the past, if you're a long-term SFB Online subscriber, that if you get your email notifications, if you don't receive them, then all of a sudden you'll be put into demo mode. You won't. The one thing I think I might have to, I probably should do is, when it comes to users in the rooms, currently give you a status: lieutenant, cadet, captain, that kind of thing. I'm a lieutenant. And what I might have to do is, if you're in demo mode, I'm thinking about, I probably should have that come up as demo instead, because of currently there's nothing in the client when you log in that tells you that your subscription has expired. So if you relied previously that you were unable to log in, except for explicitly saying, okay, I want to use this as a demo account, and then your call sign got changed to be demo_whatever your call sign that you selected. It now actually allows you to just log in as that call sign, allows you to do everything to a certain degree. If he actually went into a room and tried to add something other than like the tournament, you know, the Klingon or Federation tournament cruisers, you wouldn't be able to do anything else. And that'd be your indication that your subscription had expired. But I know that's kind of a passive thing, and that's one thing I did not think about when it comes to when I made that switch. I forgot to think about how that current subscribers see this. You know, what happens when they expire? You know, obviously, most people never let. For those who don't want to expire, they see the email and they renew in time to have it so it does not expire. But if people had previously relied on a secondary message, basically that they were unable to log in to the client, then, you know, my guess is Justin might have been looking for that indication that, you know, the client wouldn't let him to log in as a secondary indicator that his subscription had expired. You know,
I think this is a great idea. Putting the instead of the rank of what you get in the in your rank, instead you're a demo.
Right.
I think that's great.
Yeah, it should be something relatively simple that I can add to give that indication that yes, this person is running a demo account. Because even for those people that you're playing against, you will know that they're running a demo account. So.
And while we're talking about those ranks and stuff, I'd like to point out, just kind of circle back for those people who don't know the history, that those ranks are actually come from the Netkill tournament, which basically at one point your standing inside the Netkill tournament would generate a number compared to everybody else because it's a ladder tournament.
Right.
And this would equate to a certain rank. Which Paul has figured out what those actual numbers are behind the scenes, right, but that way the people who do best in this ladder tournament are the ones that have the Admiral, and then with a sliding scale downward. Technically, the net kill is still going. It's just I haven't seen anybody do a semifinal or a final in several years.
I haven't seen anybody play a game and register a net kill for many years.
I'm sure that if people got some interest in it, then we could probably bring it back. And the way to do that would basically be to, when you get into a tournament game with somebody, like a just for fun tournament game, you ask them if you can do a net kill. And then at that point, you play your game, and then you go back to the Starfleet Battles Online website to the net kill tournament area, and the loser of the battle reports who the winner and loser was, or actually, I guess, who they were playing. And that will feed in. And if you do that enough times in a season, in a 3-month period, then you can actually advance yourself inside the net kill and advance your rank there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is cool. Yes. So this impulse, I was at range 8 to the scouts. Because I decided that I think my target should be the scout and tried if I can possibly knock out like special sensors, which would be fantastic. So I started with firing 2 shield crackers from each of the CAs, which I had to actually mention to Frank what they were. Okay, this is. I didn't see that. You know, Justin was asking for help here. Someone tell me why I'm seeing text based. Like, well, I didn't even see that until Frank said, "Hey, you know, Justin has a question." It's like, okay, what is it? And I tried to help, and then he just went. He just left. And I originally thought it was a problem where he actually went in and said this is used text-based ships in the client, which was not the case because it should never have accidentally been activated. I apologize for some of the language that Justin says, but I'm...
Yar, going on. So he was upset. Got it.
I'm not sure what you mean. It doesn't work for FedCom. Get rid of it. I'm not sure what you mean. I mean, what doesn't work? Okay. If you're talking about text-based, the FedCom stuff I haven't worked on when it comes to text-based. SSDs. That was originally designed for SFB, and I've not actually ported it over to the FedCom portion, if that's what you're talking about. Yeah, and this is reminding here that Frank that yeah that the Shieldcrackers fired during the Shield segment, and actually they didn't do too bad considering. I was able to actually hit with two. So I got a total of 8 points of damage against the facing shield for the scout. Which was yoo-hoo! Got shield damage. Right, I think I actually had a plus one against the frigate scout. And this is where I overloaded, I fired all my particle cannons in overloaded mode at the scout. Because, as you know, when I wanted to possibly take it out, or at least damage it enough. Now, after all was said and done, I actually did get internals, and we're gonna wait for that soon. That will occur. Launching another shuttle. I'm not sure what these shuttles were. You know, after all said and done. Fired them. Yeah. Oh boy. Yep.
Did you whack his scout?
I hurt him. I hurt the scout. Yeah. And unfortunately, the CA has a plus one, so only one hit instead of two hits from the CA. And actually, those were pretty decent rolls. 4-1, 4-3. That's pretty good. Unfortunately, it's 50% shot at range 8. So we got a total of three hit for a total of 18 on shield number 2. Same shield, and this is where it goes, oh yeah, there goes center hull, there goes a bridge, there goes a phaser 3, there goes auxiliary control, and also, last and certainly not least, a G-Drac. So like, cool! I get first blood, you know? Dun, 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 dun. On to impulse number 4, and I decided, you know, I really should keep an eye on things a little more. I added additional range for things. Just move them all closer. Now, the one thing that I did not realize is right there. Underneath that drone is a stack of ships.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's why. Down, if you look down here, you'll notice that the NCL is only 3 hexes away.
Huh.
This is probably where I should have, at the very least, turned and tried to run as you know, try to get away. The issue with turning is that the drones would have hit me full flat out because of at this point, we were only at impulse 4. My left side phasers hadn't cycled yet. Had one left side phaser cycled, the other one was not cycled. You know, I have an issue, and then of course, and then the left side phasers there too. The forward phasers. With an out left arc, they were used on the last impulse of turn 3, so those haven't cycled yet. So I basically need to almost be coming straight forward them, so I actually can fire my other forward arc phasers at those drones. So, at the very least, having a fleet that has no seeking weapons itself against a fleet that has lots of seeking weapons. And then this is not even a lot. This is doesn't even have any fighters, you know. Is not easy. Fortunately, I was able to get the left side phaser threes and fire those. Now, what gets interesting is a little bit later where he actually gets within range two. He's now range two. Underneath all of these seeking weapons. Yeah, normally, the thing is, he hasn't been moving his ECM drones. It's like, okay, but that should automatically pop up in the client saying, hey, you haven't moved these drones. And I did not see anything. And I know that I'm pretty sure the client doesn't, if you tractor a drone, it will then remove it from the list of units that need to move. Because drones and are special when it comes to if you tractor them. If you tractor a ship, it changes the speed and they still need to move. But scouts are not. Oh, yeah. Okay. I was about to mention that net kill doesn't work for FedCon. That is true. I think you might have brought that up before. Because I know it was brought up to my attention before that the FedCon has no net kill. Though I do have a FedCon duel, which the whole idea was to make it like the SFB tournament room. I'm not even sure how that shows up in the client at the moment in time because it's been so long since I actually looked at that. I'm a guy. My attention is focused on what I'm looking for. You know, if there's additional things, I ignore them. Yeah, as I mentioned here, you know, I say it should announce it unless it's tractored. And he said, oh, no, it's not tractored. It's like, okay, that is.
I was just thinking, Paul, you could call the FC version net injure.
Was that Gary again?
I was saying that you could call the FC version net injure.
Oh. Yes, I understood because you actually don't kill things in FedCom. You disable them. We're gonna be nice and nice about this. No, you don't destroy things. You just disable it.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on your
definition. Okay, I just scratched FedCom off my list.
Since the shield reinforcements, you don't have. There's more limitations there. It actually is easier to mission kill ships relative to SFB because you've got the shields burn through.
Right.
And you're basically, you don't have general reinforcement. You only have specific. And even that's limited to the battery power that you have. So,
right.
If you go into an FB.
This is where I.
So this, this net injured thing sounds like the Klingons are the hardest hit. You know, the Klingons being so aggressive, it's like, oh, no, we're not disabled right now.
They're not going to be hit by anything. They'll simply be touched by it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, first round of injury, and I got 36 internals from his photons at range two. Big surprise.
Hey, your ship's turning red. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Is that like a Christmas tree ship?
Yeah.
In July.
It's turning Romulan.
And then he fired
like the song, Turning Romulan.
My other heavy cruiser and decided to go destroy one of my rib breakers. Went through quite a few phasers. So now 34 against, so I have both my ship, heavy cruiser have over 30 points of damage each. And then we have plasmas. Okay, yeah, I had to fix things. Because I mistakenly thought that one of the weapons was in arc, and it was not in arc. Because of where the ships were, I thought it was here where the plasmas are, which is centerline. So I marked off one of my right side phasers, and it's like, no, those aren't in arc. It's like, oh yeah, I forgot. They're over here. The ships are actually right here, which is off my, it's right, the shield, between shield number one and number six. And then he slams 40 into my CA number two with the plasmas. Thank you very much. Take that on a new shield, which was, that's what, one of the reasons why I turned into him, so I can take things on a new shield. And yeah, I think I have another 40 on my other one. So I took two plasmas on each ship, and this, and then shield the number two heavy cruiser is the phasers are pretty wiped, the web breakers are gone, the half the particle cannons are gone, quite a bit of the warp is gone. Didn't hit the center warp, but still down to 3 right warp, 5 left warp, and then 16 center warp. I have 1 impulse left. I think I have no appers. Yeah, no APRs. So, you know, I'm in very, very poor shape at this moment in time. And this is where I basically, we called the game at this. I think it's, this is where we called the game. Yeah, he destroyed my emergency bridge too. I was going to be doing anything. Yeah, and what happened also is that the scout, he turned away, and by turning away, his down shield number two, now it, you know, is no longer in arc, so it's pointless. I can, if I want to, I could try to beat up on using destroyers, but it wouldn't, it probably wouldn't get past the shields. It might, but even this at the range, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So it's 9, and what is this impulse? 6. Yeah. Here with. What was he? Was he doing something else? I forget. We'll find out in a moment. I forgot this. We can just wait here for a moment because 4 times the speed. Okay. There it is. He now fire some more wonderful phasers at my beautiful ships. Cause, you know, with a kind of new shield. But this one's on shield number two, which got destroyed by the plasma. So then he's hitting on my down shield, and grand total of 30 on my on my heavy cruiser. So to say the very least, another 30 internals means it's definitely way past crippled. Definitely past crippled. Yeah, when you're looking at
he's focused on one ship.
Yeah, you have two right warp, no left warp, only 12 center warp, no impulse, no APRs. All my whip breakers are gone. You know, tractors are gone. It says I have three shuttles. Yeah, and at that point, that's why I called it. I agreed to call it because I've only damaged his scout, and he's really beat the crap out of my two heavy cruisers. And even if I come in and I have the destroyer make a run at it, it's not going to do much to I can possibly do some more damage to the scout, possibly even do some damage to one of his cruisers. But I don't think that will do enough damage to actually turn the tide. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and there's definitely, there's two main drones. Because I was constantly fighting the drones, and that's what, any phasers was completely for drone defense. That was the only way I could have done T-bombs, but the problem with T-bombs is that to get the drones that are inbound, I'd have to drop a shield that was facing my opponent.
So, Paul, what do you? It's been noted that the Saltorians do very poorly against lots of seeking weapons, as you just saw in this game.
Right.
But what do you think you could have done better to pull the situation out? What was your how do you think you could have won this one?
Oh, jeez.
I mean, knowing what you know now, what could you have done?
Wow.
Just in general, I might have suggested using your phasers primarily for drone defense and just focus on using your particle cannons. You just go for a long range, kind of like do the Klingon way, the saber dance.
Yeah. And
like a ballet instead of a closing.
Right. Yeah.
Tricky ballet with ships with a turn mode of D, though.
Yeah.
The thing is, he also has the particle cannons can shoot twice in a turn, so it would be really good for that, like, ballet style versus closing in this particular situation. I don't know. It's easy for us to second guess it.
Yeah, I definitely.
Although the particle cannons are good if your ship is more agile, like the pirate ships that they have in the home galaxy. Those are pretty good. Like if you put the particle cannons in the option mounts, in terms of being able to maneuver, so they're more agile than the Centaurians would be. But of course, technically the old galaxy Centaurians have particle cannons too, but then they put those webcasters, so people kind of gloss over them. But speaking of particle weapons, I was just thinking about earlier, you talked about getting first blood. And I was thinking that if you're using the Vari instead, because they've got particle beams, but for them, first blood has a totally different meaning. So but they'd have to wait until after the torture ships.
Yeah.
But,
the better part of Valor would have been to stay at range, around range 15, or dip into 15, because if we decide to do prox photons, 15 is a nice range for them, and slow down and basically use my phaser for just knocking down the drones. Obviously, that means that the game would take at least another 10 turns to go through, so we'd have to play somewhere between 13 and 14 turns to come with an outcome. And yeah, because no matter what, sooner or later I was gonna have to close, no matter what. Now obviously it's like any other empire, you know, and that is that you want to wait for your opportunity to close when you think that your opponent is going to be at its weakest. And that's definitely was not the time to actually close the range. So, yeah, that was a mistake on my part. And definitely, in the future, if I play another fleet game, I will definitely, if there are scouts allowed, I will definitely select the scout. Because I think, especially when you're playing against Feds, this is the second Fed I've played in a row. The first one didn't have a scout, but of course he also had 20 photons for his whole fleet, which was freaking insane. Because you could do 20 prox photons. Even if only 50% of them hit, that's 40 points of damage at range 15.
That's enough. Pretty much any shield gone.
Most shields gone, and you have internals. You only can take that so many times before you're gone. You're done. You know.
A favorite I've seen in campaigns is Hydrans, and I like to run the numbers of the Stingers because it Stingers at range 10 will average 5 points of damage, but that's in a neutral EW environment. You have to have a scout to make that work, or to make it not work.
right. Yeah, I still remember the one campaign game I played for Frank where we actually had Andromedans, and I had actually an eel. Which was interesting, I've mentioned this before in the past, which is I decided to save power on for the eel to use more EW by actually having the mothership tractor the eel and just drag it around. Now, it slowed down the mothership, but it saved power on for the eel.
I think I remember that battle. I think that was one of the first campaign battles I got into. I think because I was doing a battle captain as the Hydran.
Yep.
And I think I ended up just popping your mothership with a bunch of Hell Wars.
Yep.
Wow. Doesn't the tractor interfere with that?
No.
No. Okay.
No. I looked into that one. I made sure that it wouldn't blind special sensors or anything like that.
Okay. Well, that was very interesting.
Again, it's one of those issues with having such a small class of ship has special sensors because it doesn't have that much power, you know, and special sensors, especially when it comes to loaning EW one way or the other, is
takes. Well, you can't just grab it from your panels.
No. That also requires them That also requires you to actually have it so your opponent actually fires at the scout, versus just wait for the scout to run out of batteries and then start slowing down slowly. You know, so. Anyhow, that's how my game went. Then didn't go.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that the end of an era, you talk about the end of your tournament.
Yep. Agreed.
So your bug friends will have to try one more time.
Right. And obviously, Gary, if you want to call in, you're more than happy to join my Discord server. I'll make sure there's an active link on sfuoncall.com. So if you want to join the server and then be able to voice your have your lovely voice as part of the podcast, you can do it there.
Obviously, I thought the whole point of switching definition away from talk show is that people wouldn't have to hear me.
Well, the original reason for talk show was because the people to dial in, and if they wanted to, or they could actually, log in via talk show itself, and using the browser. That was kind of later. The original version of TalkShoe didn't allow that. They actually had here's a geeky kind of thing. They had a SIP connection that you could call in on. If you had a SIP client, you could actually call in using the SIP protocol, which was free to call in to TalkShoe. Now, later on, they dropped that, and that call in, I forget what provider they used. It was some kind of chintzy provider that sometimes the call ins, it just failed. Obviously, I like it, but Gary, at this point in the life of the podcast, we got you and possibly Jeff, and that's about the only two people that call in, and that's why. Gary, that's why I asked you, okay, what do you want to do? And you said, well, basically, you had no opinion, so I'm going with Discord then. So that's what I'm going forward with. I'm hoping that talk show will maybe act better once I stop streaming.
Probably not,
but
I have a feeling their course is set.
Yeah.
Unless somebody buys it and makes it their passion project.
Yeah. I said again, because this is the second. I know this is the second owners.
Mm-hmm.
So. Well, Gary?
But anyway, just the final thing is for anyone, once again, anyone listening, conversations are still happening on the BBS. I know that the ADB just set up a new thread for people to discuss alpha carrier SSDs, which generation of fighters should go on them or whatever. And but of course, there's still talk to be had about updating the lost Omega modules, replacing the SSD modules, so to speak, and also B, the current campaign project in terms of getting the Lycerons and then other empires one at a time ready. So anyone's wants to pop over to the BBS and add their thoughts, now is as good a time as any.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully in the medium to long term, it'll basically put Omega on a much more stable footing for people to be able to get into it going forward.
Yes, agreed. So, well, Gary, lovely having you here. You have a good night.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Doug,
hey,
it's always a great time having around. Anything you want to mention before?
Well, yes, 4 weeks from now we have Gamers of Summer, and I would love to see a whole bunch of people come out for it. Because what the heck? Mm-hmm. It's Labor Day weekend, and we'll have plenty of space for gaming.
Yep.
It would be nice to see a whole bunch of people show up and do some Starfleet battles or FedCom or something.
Yep.
If there's any Federation Empire players listening, we've got space enough. You guys could do that for 3 days straight.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah. Yeah. Barry.
And leave it.
Barry came over 2 weeks ago. We played Through the Ages.
Yeah.
We had to shorten it because it was like 10 o'clock. And we just had finished the third age. There's actually four ages. So it's like,
You taught me a little bit of the basic mechanics of that a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually think that game I had played before. And need a reintroduction though to it. And it was fun. You know, obviously, big surprise, Barry won. Because of
it, no,
to me, it was a learner's game for me.
Oh, absolutely.
So, unlike some people who can get those resource management games, just pick it up and they're gone. I need some help to get through the game at least once or maybe twice. And be able to actually have an idea for tactics and strategies and so forth. So,
Plus, there's a whole bunch of it's just it's a rabbit hole in its own way, it looks like. So, there's that. You want to give a call tomorrow afternoon, like after 5-ish or so?
Sure.
Catch up on like yesterday and today were like severely brain draining dramas for me.
Understood.
But there was some extremely interesting news, and see how tomorrow goes and so forth.
Okay.
But because we were going to talk, but it's a little late now.
Yeah, agreed. And tried to get here early, and I did too. And I was hoping you'd be here, but you weren't.
So. Yeah.
Well, I'll talk to you. I will talk to you tomorrow then. Okay. Yeah. Good night.
Okay. Thanks. Have a good one, Paul. Thanks for having me on. And again, gamers this summer, Labor Day weekend coming up quick. So schedule if you have it.
Okay. Okay. Good night.
Paul, thank you very much. You put on a class act. I appreciate it.
Yep. Matt, it's great having you around. I always like to hear a new voice. You know.
Thank you, sir.
And I will do my best to. Because I did save the game after Frank won. I saved it all, so I have the whole chat log for the game, so I can send that to you.
That's all I need.
Cool.
That's all I need.
I would love to see the video created from that.
Yeah, I've been putting a lot of work into it recently to help make it a little easier, and. I recently got a Tholian game, so I plan on putting that together to show off some of the web.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah.
So looking forward to it.
Yep.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. You have a good night.
Take care. Okay. Good night. Bye.
Okay. So that's how to play, and more importantly, not how to play Saltorian versus the Federation. It's definitely, when it comes to fleet games, obviously the Stiltorians have a chance, but you have to play the long game. And I mean the long game. So anyway, with that, I'm Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.